keep it alive. Through these lines I write, I keep it live, cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling. When you feeling them flares, they can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario, my stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind. Oh no, it's ponderoso, dope. So no overdose, cause it's dope. Yo, man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd no, we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursue.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio once again with your host, Nick Burnaby of the Anti-Media.org and DB Schwartz. How's it going, bro?
Doing good, man. Just reading up on a lot of the stuff going on, and it's always the same stuff. The stories just keep getting retread, but then more and more things are getting released. And, you know, the big one today is Greenwald's site launched, and, man, it's a pretty good one.
Yeah, man, there's some exciting info coming out of there. I mean, unfortunately, it's mostly, stuff that we don't want to hear. I mean, it's stuff that we already suspected. But if you looked at the in-depth and the professionalism in the Glenn Greenwald article today, I mean, it was just a great read, you know. And we're going to get into that. We're going to get into what Greenwald was talking about today. It's some scary, scary stuff, and it's stuff that we talk about all the time on the show regarding drones and things like that, and the real dangers that we face with these drones and all that. But make sure you guys check us out Monday, Wednesday, and Friday here on UCY.TV. This is our home network. We're probably rebroadcasted on a few other places. But check us out Monday and Wednesday. It's me and DB, and on Friday we have LaVon. And she does a show that's a bit different than what we do. It's a little more of a, you know, natural living type of show. And we get to cover all this nonsense that goes on in the whole politosphere and all this garbage. But, you know, our job is to keep these politicians, these bureaucrats, and these corporatists honest, you know, and that's really, what we try to do. And that's what the whole show is going to be about tonight once we get through some of this news. But we're going to have some really cool guests on tonight. We're going to have Derek Bros of the Houston Free Thinkers and the Conscious Resistance. He's a journalist, activist out of Houston. Really, really, effective guy. He was the one that stood in for Adam Kokesh when Kokesh was in jail doing the Adam versus the Man show. And then we have Emily Renzink, which is a journalist with the Anti-Media, and she's a really great writer. She's an activist up near Seattle, up in Washington, and she's written for The Examiner, and she has her own blog as well, and she's going to talk about that. And then we have Ponder, the guy that did our intro song and our outro song. Some really good music coming out of San Diego, so that should be cool. And we also have Mikhail Thalen. He writes for Story Leak with Anthony Gucciardi. I mean, he's featured on Drudge Report. So we're gonna go through and we're gonna talk about ways and ideas and strategies for people, anyone interested in getting into media, becoming an independent journalist, you know, whatever it is involved in the media, making videos and stuff like that. We're going to talk about that stuff later on in the show, so make sure you guys stick around. We'll probably start around at the half-hour mark here, but we're just going to cover a bit of news before we jump into that. I guess the first thing that we were already talking about is this new leak that came out today that Greenwald broke on his new website.
Right, and it was the Intercept, and I guess he has the one story up, which we already knew. I mean, anybody that knows what's going on with the drone program knows that they really don't rely on human intelligence at all. They're basically allowing drone operators to target people based on metadata pings from cell phones. And can we be any more lazy and ruthless than that? Because they're saying now that these guys are passing off their SIM cards onto other people, and then they're just getting their drone bombing like innocent civilians, and the casualty rate's getting huge, and then they're not even getting the guys they want because they're hip to the game already. They already know the tactic. So, you know, this is foreshadowing too of what we've always talked about, which is, could it be used on our own soil? Of course. And could it be used with lethal efficiency and very, very easily and efficiently? Oh, yeah. Because everybody's got a cell phone.
And I mean, I wouldn't doubt that they would be willing to use drones on U.S. soil. I mean, we saw that huge rant, that whole Rand Paul filibuster thing, and then a day later he turned around and said, yeah, I don't care. You know, someone's robbing a liquor store. Yeah, you could use a drone against them.
No, I mean, we're going to have drones with these Gauss cannons or some way to snipe. You can't just be, you know, it's horrible already what they're doing. So they can't just be targeting people and hope for the best with collateral damage. It'll never fly. It's not even flying in Pakistan. Because Pakistan has the ability to bring out SAMs and take them out, now they've stopped drone bombing over there. But in a place where they can't, like Iraq or Afghanistan, yeah, they'll continue the policies.
Yeah, and it's just so dangerous, man. Because we got this whole system at the fingertips of these bureaucrats, and we don't know what the hell they're capable of doing. We know that the majority of them are sociopaths. The majority of them are millionaires. The majority of them are disconnected from reality. They don't know what we're going through. They don't really care about us. So to think that they have the power to literally, if they wanted to, just pick out anybody's cell phone and say, hey, drop a drone strike on that guy's cell phone, wherever it's at. I don't care where it's at. Drop a drone strike on it. That is just frightening. The fact that these bureaucrats have this power.
Well, we need to get back, and this is a big portion of the fictional series Homeland. We need to get back to human intelligence. We cannot rely on our technology to do the dirty work because it's defeating the purpose of national security by creating more blowback than we can possibly deal with. I mean, it's going to start where there's waves and waves of people who've had families decimated by this drone strike program who have nothing to lose anymore. I mean, this is what it's creating. And it's not going to help our national security in the long term. It's going to make us more vulnerable, in my opinion.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's just a classic example of blowback, you know, and we're seeing it all over already. And we're finally starting to see it come around in this country. You know, we're finally starting to see people get tired of it. And this thing today, and I think that's why Greenwald held on to it for so long. It's because this is a really big story, and it's really each person can personally identify this because each one of us have a cell phone. We know damn well that every single one of us are being spied on by the NSA. So now that we know that after these leaks today, what we found out is that they could just target anybody's phone. That affects everybody. So I think this is a big chance for a rallying cry, and I think, you know, it's perfect timing. Because we have this big event coming up tomorrow. It's an internet action against the NSA. It's basically, I don't know if you saw it going around, but all these websites are basically going to put up a banner on their sites and you know, publicize what's going on. So, you know, we're talking about big sites like Boing Boing and Upworthy and these, you know, really big social media sites. Everybody's getting on board, and then we're throwing on top of that, we're doing a Twitter storm tomorrow as well. So there's going to be a Twitter storm tomorrow starting at 5 Pacific time. No hashtags are going to be nullify the NSA. stop the NSA, stop spying.
So and we can go over this data center because I've really been researching it and looking into what it really is. And you know, they're it's still not up because they're getting water problems with cooling. They're getting electrical grid problems. You're talking about this data center in Bluff, what is it, Bluffield, Utah, or wherever. It runs $1 million a month in electrical bill. It costs $1 billion to build, and then it's $1 billion in machines. And then every time something goes wrong with even one server, it's $100,000 to fix it. So it's not up, and it's not even holding that much data. They thought it was going to be able to hold all this metadata, and they'd be able to build their tidy little blackmail network or whatever the heck they're doing this for. And it's not even going to be able to hold as much data as they thought. So it's just a colossal failure on all regards, and it's patently horrible for our country. This data can only be used against people. It won't be used to keep people safe. How could it be? It can't be sifted through quick enough unless they're using an algorithm, and in that case, it's back to this metadata with no human intelligence.
I mean, we all know that there's only a very, very, very small percentage of the population, let alone the Muslim population, are actually terrorists, okay? Maybe 0.00001% of the population.
Yeah, who knows?
Why do they need a data center that watches over billions and billions of people?
Billions, because I mean, it's the whole internet.
This whole terrorism excuse is a total straw man argument. It's just a scapegoat. I mean, they're building the biggest – I mean, it's already built – the biggest spy grid in the history of mankind. We got a bunch of unelected bureaucrats running the place. And who knows what the hell they're capable of doing. We already see what they're doing in the Middle East. They're killing innocent people because they're dropping drone strikes on cell phones that are being held by children or women.
Right. And that's the worst part about it all is that it does not work. Because when you're a professional at whatever you do, whether it is a doctor, a lawyer, or you sow the seeds of terrorism and you're an extremist, these are organized groups that – can easily defeat a computer algorithm, which is just based on patterns, just by not following the patterns. Change your SIM card every time you make a – I mean, it's so simple to defeat that it cannot work against what they're trying to do. We know it's not for what they're saying it's for. It's obvious it's not.
It's this whole like David and Goliath thing, dude. You got this huge behemoth, which is the U.S. government, the NSA. It's a slow move. It's a slow moving giant. You know, and then you got these terrorists, which let's face it, by definition, terrorism is a guerrilla tactic. You're not going to beat a guerrilla tactic by building up these huge giant systems. You know what I mean? You're not going to use an AC-130 to battle a guerrilla that's just
right.
One guy in a neighborhood, in a hostage situation. You're not going to bring out the AC-130. You're going to send in the hostage, negotiators. Everything they say they're doing this for, it doesn't make any sense because they're fighting this tiny guerrilla force and they're building up the hugest dragnet in the history of mankind.
I mean, think about it from a logical perspective. We're fighting people from the past, okay? These are people, the mindset is hundreds of years ago. Their technology is nowhere near ours, yet we continue to advance and advance and advance and build up this network that these guys will sift through like, you know, cockroaches through cracks in a dilapidated building. They can't be caught by this net because this net is an en masse net. It can't defeat, like you said, a guerrilla warfare force. Only human intelligence and boots on the ground can do that, and we're getting away from that. So we know we're not meeting the enemy head on. We're preparing for something much, much larger, than what we've been told.
Yeah, we're being misled about the reasoning behind it. And, I mean, from what we do know, one reason behind it is to dragnet and spy on everybody in the U.S. We're spying on our own citizens with our own tax dollars, you know. So it's just insane.
And it's just ineffectual. That's all I can say. It's just a massive waste. You know?
Yeah, man, so it's a huge beast to battle, but I mean, I'm hoping this whole the new Greenwald site, this information that we got today, combined with the existing amount of people that are just pissed off because of all this NSA and all this privacy abuse, add that into this big event that's going off tomorrow. I think we're going to start to see a big shift. We saw that these lawmakers, I forget what state they're in, but they're moving to basically remove the water from the NSA facility, so they're not going to be able to keep this thing open. You know, I mean, the local representatives are starting to finally react to this stuff, and they're starting to realize, okay, our constituency is pissed off. They're not going to let us get away with all this spying, so now we're going to have to roll it back.
Yep. I mean, as long as we're still armed as a nation, we still can tell these guys what to do. That's where the dominoes lay. If they try to pull any of this other garbage they try to do with gun rights and this Bloomberg idiot with the mayors against illegal guns, which I saw that is dissolving now because people aren't buying into it. We know that we're free because we're armed, and we can't stay free if we're not armed, and they can't push this stuff down our throats too much longer if we stay armed, because we will get together and we will stop it, even if it is just community by community. And if New York City wants to remain under a Bloombergian type socialist paradise, go for it. And Los Angeles will go the opposite way with banning GMOs and all the other good stuff we like.
And defunding this whole NSA stuff. I mean, that's awesome that's starting to finally happen, you know?
Well, states' rights are going to come back, like we've said. The prevalence will increase because politicians at a local level, House of Representative guys, they're on 2-year schedules. They have to basically, you know, succumb to the will of the people. And you can do things at a state level. Look at Colorado. They can't stop it.
I just read this story this week about these people in Maine, and I believe the city was called Kennewick or something like that. And apparently they declared, the local government declared themselves completely food sovereign, and they basically said none of the federal laws apply to our city or our town, and any federal agents that try to go in there, it basically says in there that you guys have – it's illegal for them to come in. So if the federal agents try to come in and try to regulate us, the FDA tries to come in and say we gotta you know, do things a certain way, then the local officials have to arrest the federal officials. And that's kind of the same angle that they were taking – that they are taking with this anti-NDAA legislation. It's not really valid. Just like how they said we got anti-NDAA legislation in California at the state level. If you look at it, it's actually not valid because they just basically say the local officials can't be involved in the indefinite detention of U.S. citizens.
We're hip to the game now, Nick. We know they're going to use a major catastrophe probably planned by them to gain total control. And this is the whole game, the flag game, like they like to say, white flag, black flag, false, and so on and so forth. And individual communities are starting to understand, at least people that know what's really going on with the inner workings of our government know, that if something goes down, we lose all autonomy at an individual state level. Not even that, at a local level, you'll see things like troop conscriptments and stupid stuff like that, and quartering foreign troops and, you know, giving away land. All that stuff's in the workings. So to nullify a lot of these crazy laws is a great thing. It's the only way we're going to be able to pretty much keep our country intact, in my opinion. We have to get back to state rights.
Yeah, man, it all comes back down to local governorship. You know, I don't even want to say government because government to me is like a bad word.
But local leadership,
because if we're going to let these federal bureaucrats push us around and tell us what rights we do have and what rights we don't, then we're not actually free. We're only free as long as we follow their rules that they set up. If you look at the justice system, you look at any institutional function of this country, it only benefits the very rich, and it is regressive against the poor. The poorer you get, the worse you're affected. You talk about the drug war. We talk about the war on drugs. We talk about the prison population. We talk about the monetary system. It's all regressive. It all goes against the poor people.
It's really simple. I mean, we won World War II, we controlled the resources, we had the military to do what we wanted, and we entered a golden age, the 50s, where everybody had what they needed, right? Of course, we still had tons and tons of social problems in this country at that point, you know, but to continue the way we're using resources in this country alone, just 330 million people requires 1.5 Earths, and we just simply don't have that. So what's going on is the paradigm shift is we have to go to a resource-based economy, and we talk about that all the time. And that means going back to sustainable and local, spreading out, dissolving big megalopolises because they're just inefficient, and we cannot support a city like LA with 10 million people on a desert coast. We can't do it. So when our economy really does start having issues with production and with transportation and food starts getting more expensive, naturally the way of things is going to be, if there's no crisis, naturally we're going to organically evolve into what we want. And our government functions great at that level. We just need to weaken the Fed and strengthen the states, and we're all good.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and like I always argue is break it down even further than the state level, at least like what they're doing here with this food sovereignty, like we're trying to do with the NSA, and also what they're doing with the NDAA, is the more local you can get, the more responsive you're gonna, more of a response you're gonna get from your people, your local representatives. And then if they don't listen to you, then guess what? Then it's time to just say, you know what?
Then you recall them.
Yeah, then you say, you know what, you guys are no longer, I no longer consider you my local government, so I'm not going to abide by your whatever it is that you're trying to tell me to do. Because that's just how it's got to be, because if we don't get to that point where we just have individual sovereignty, then we're always going to end up slowly but surely letting it seep back into this centralized power. And let's look at it. The country was founded on this idea of a decentralized a decentralized power structure, and then it ended up forming back into this pyramid scheme, like we always see over and over and throughout history, throughout every civilization. You always see this pyramid scheme right before the whole thing comes down, just like in the Roman Empire, just like the kings of England and the Egyptian empires. I mean, everything, every civilization that's basically ever existed ends up repeating this same mistake.
Well, you cannot manipulate a money supply, use it as a global reserve, and then expect people to be okay with it when you can no longer supplant them militarily, aka China and even Russia probably. I mean, honestly, that's a mutually assured destruction type of thing. But that's what it's coming down to. It's just there's a shift of power to the east. We knew it was coming. We knew the dragon was rising. They've said it forever. And we're just going to have to adapt. But we cannot let these guys with our best intentions very far away from what they want to allow them to rule us anymore. We have to start taking leadership roles like we're doing, on a local community level. And then when they try to collapse the dollar, we'll be fine without it for a little while. And we don't have to go to the electronic currency they want. We'll go to the new dollar. We'll go to a gold-backed or some other backed dollar, and we'll be okay. We'll get the economy back to where it should be, and it'll function great.
Yeah, as long as you have freely competing currencies, you don't got to worry about getting too big of a hit. Now, the problem is that right now, as we're seeing Bitcoin get closed in on, Russia just announced that they plan on banning it, basically.
Right.
The problem is we don't have currency freedom. Hey, you use whatever it is we tell you to use. If not, we're going to put a gun down your throat, or you're either going to become homeless or you're going to get thrown in jail. Right. So it's like basically you got a few choices. Not any of them are good unless you follow our rules, And so that whole idea has got to go. And we're starting to see
the rules have worked forever. It's just they can't anymore. We got to change everything. Like we're starting to see that the industrial base of our economies worldwide, as we're all competing for resources now, is stretching everything too thin, and they're not going to release Tesla tech. We know that. It's too valuable for them to keep us buying into oil and all these other things. We're going to have to take it upon ourselves, and everybody house by house gets off grid, and then we start really, really going to town halls and going, we want this done. Oh, you're not going to do it because your corporate, sponsor said not to do it? We're recalling you right now.
Yep.
And it's really, really easy to do it. We just got to have people engaged and involved, and it's got to hurt for them to do something. See, it hasn't hurt yet. Bread and circus is still working.
Yeah, that's true. There's not enough people that have felt it yet.
Not yet.
A lot of people have felt it. Now, yes. Unfortunately, all the people that have felt it, they're the people that are already like, they've already been, you know, beaten down by the system for so long. They're already so poor that they don't really have the time or the resources to try to fight back that much because they're too busy just trying to work two jobs just to scrape it by.
Right.
Now, when this stuff starts really, I mean, let's face it, we've been seeing the middle class get squeezed for years. But when this bubble finally pops and the middle class finally feels it, that's when everything's going to change, and it's going to change way quicker than any of us could even think about right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be probably kind of sudden. We've always kind of expected there'd probably be something like the banks would close and there'd be a bank run. And it looks like they're kind of prepping for that in a lot of ways, limiting, you know, people from pulling money out in big amounts and stuff like that. At least in Europe, they're trying to implement this stuff. And they can use Greece for the excuse. But in the U.S., that's not going to fly. We know our country is immensely wealthy, but it's not being trickled down. Reagan did not tell us the truth, and we need to basically break all these Fortune 500 companies up and then break the government up into the local level.
Yep, exactly. Now, a little earlier you mentioned Dianne Feinstein, and there was a quick story I wanted to bring up real quick because this I think exemplifies what we're talking about right now perfectly. You ever heard of Code Pink?
Yes.
Okay, so apparently Code Pink San Francisco has been in this feud with Dianne Feinstein for a while now, I guess. And tomorrow, to coincide with this event that I was talking about at the beginning of the show, this Stop NSA, Stop the NSA event, Nullify NSA, you know, whatever it is you want to call it. Apparently, Code Pink San Francisco is going to be down at Feinstein's house setting up surveillance cameras and actually going to start surveying her house.
Well, it's legal. You can take a video of a public street right outside someone's residence. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. So, you know, as a form of protest, they're kind of basically turning the tides on these politicians that are pro NSA, and Feinstein has been one of the worst.
Oh yeah.
I know we talk about her a lot with gun control. She's a huge gun grabber as well. She's also
owns a gun.
Yeah, I know.
She has like four armed guards around her at all times. I mean, these are not royalty. They're not. If we allow them to act like royalty, they will continue to do so, and we will suffer the consequences. But these people, unless they prove to us they aren't human beings like we are, and a lot of people think that could be the case, then they don't deserve extra special treatment. Even if they worked hard for this position, they are servants to the public. They get a great pension and a great retirement, and they're supposed to do what we want when they're in office, what we want, because the public knows what the public needs, not them.
Badges don't grant extra rights, and neither do suits, and neither do titles. So no, I don't care what the hell your title is. That doesn't give you any right above any one of us other peasants out here on the streets. You know what I mean?
I mean, it's unless they can prove that they're superior, come out of your – you know, unless this is an episode of V or something, then, you know, why do I think you're superior to me? I mean, you've shown you can run a state into the ground that should be running a fat surplus. I mean, God, we're in the red. Can you imagine the 10th most powerful economy by itself in the red because the rest of the country's dragging us down and someone can't run a state? It's pathetic.
Yep. Mismanagement, bureaucratic systems, corporatism. I mean, you name it, it's rife in our state. Now, fortunately, everyone in our state pretty much knows it, except the problem is that they keep on reelecting people like Dianne Feinstein and, Nancy Pelosi. These are California. This makes me ashamed to be from California, kind of.
Well, who runs against them? It's Republicans. Republican cannot win in California. It's so rare. I couldn't even believe Arnold made it in. It was just Gray Davis being so inept. So you just can't win here. And we got to – this is why I like this the idea of a third or fourth or fifth or as many parties as need to come up just to knock these incumbents off their thrones. They're not doing the job anymore.
Now that you mention as far as the alternative parties, third parties, independents, I'm helping Free and Equal. which is a independent elections
Gary Johnson
organization. Yeah, they're the ones that set up the third party debates last time when Gary Johnson debated Jill Stein. You know, really good debates, man. They brought up the real issues: National Defense Authorization Act, foreign policy, them spying on us. I mean, they actually talked about the real stuff. They didn't talk about who wanted to bomb Iran first. They wanted to talk about who didn't want to bomb Iran.
Well, you know? Anybody I always talk to that's liberal, because you know everybody here is, we're in California, I always like to joke, I'm so liberal, I'm libertarian. Really think about it. Think about what I mean by that. That Republicans were always historically big government. And liberals, Democrats, they wanted state rights, and they were liberals. They wanted you to have your freedom, not to ram down legislation to make you acquiesce to the needs of the state. If you're so liberal that you're libertarian, you're real classical liberal. And that's what we want to have. The third party is classical liberalism. It's going back to the pure constitutionalism so that you're free to be an idiot or whatever you want to be. But we're not going to ram any agenda down your throat if you're not hurting someone else.
Yeah, I mean, ideally, that's kind of where society needs to go. I think we have a guest on the line. Hey, are you there?
Hey, what's going on?
What's going on? This is Mikhail?
Yep.
Hey, man. So we got Mikhail on the line. Mikhail Thalen, he's a journalist with StoryLeak.com, and he's often featured on InfoWars and Drudge Report. And, you know, we kind of wanted to have a show tonight just to, you know, talk about what people can do to start to try to get into the whole independent media stuff, whether it be writing or researching. And you know, we know you're one of the really effective and successful journalists. I remember when I first met you, you were working at Examiner, and then you know, now you're on StoryLeak, you're featured on InfoWars, you're on Drudge Report, it seems like every other week. You know, and we're talking about millions of people seeing your stuff. So if you can plug your sites, and then give us a couple of tips about how you got started and what you got into it and what helped you out.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thanks for having me. And StoryLeak.com, and I'm working for InfoWars.com as well, kind of working with both those sites. So you can see most of my stuff there. Well, when I first started writing, I always kind of had the thought in my mind that, you know, why would anyone read my stuff over all of the other great, work and websites there is out there? So my thought was always I had to bring something that you couldn't get anywhere else. And, you know, if there's a big website or, you know, if Obama goes out and gives a speech, obviously everyone's going to write on that. But, you know, just being a person to myself, you know, with not a lot of people reading my stuff originally, you know, why would anyone come read my breakdown of that as opposed to the place they already go to? So I always tried to write stuff that no one else in the alternative media was writing on, and that's something I try to do today is cover topics that I don't see anyone else covering. So I try to follow a lot of local small news groups all across the country, and so that was my thing, was always try to offer something that no one else had.
Yeah, man, that's, I mean, to me, being on the whole social media side of it, I can definitely see, like, the effectiveness of that, because you're not seeing a story that's been seen by people already, like, 10 times in their newsfeed. It's something, it's like, oh, I didn't know that was happening. And that's something that, you know, the initial impact comes in, and then next thing you know, there's like five other websites talking about it too, you know? So it's kind of like, trend setting. And I think that is a really good point, because, when you can get this new information out there, that really is the most effective information, and it's, you know, this original content, it kind of has a different reaction when it comes to the whole social media field. You know, things like that tend to get read by a lot more people, and they go a lot more viral, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And there's so many great writers and stuff out there, and so, I mean, I see a lot of other people do that too. Write about stories that no one else has, and so I think that's really, yeah, an effective way to get people's attention. So when they read it, they know it's your story instead of the same story that everyone else has read everywhere else already.
Yeah, I think the best value actually of the alternative media is we will say what the media won't, and we're just as informed as them because we're all news junkies, and that's the best power we have, is we can actually cipher through all this garbage.
Yeah, and the mainstream media sometimes won't even cover these stories. I did a story recently where I published emails that exposed Bank of America's global corporate vice security president was basically working with the feds and local police groups to spy on people in Anonymous and whatnot. And the guy who got the documents or the emails told me that he tried to give them to the New York Times and they wouldn't take them, which is surprising because after I covered it, it was on RT and it became an international news story. So I don't know why these places don't cover these things sometime, but I guess that's better for us because I imagine our breakdown is going to be a lot better than the mainstream media most of the time.
Well, it's kind of like that whole thought process when it comes down to kind of even when it comes to being an activist. It's like when there's nobody else talking about something, it's hard to be it's scary to be the first person to talk about it, But once another person talks about it, then everybody jumps on board. And it's I think it was what was his name? The writer, he had that quote where he said, when there's no one else being a patriot, it's really hard to be a patriot. But when everyone else is joining in, it's the price to be a patriot, goes way down, basically. And I think that's why the mainstream gets scared, because they're scared of a lot of these corporate repercussions because they have all these corporate sponsors. They can't be the ones to break the story, but they can still report on it later because then they could, then it's like, okay, well, they're not the ones that had to break it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think for us it's a lot better, too, because, there's probably a lot of good, journalists and writers even in corporate media. But as you said, a lot of them probably can't write on a lot of things. So, I think it's good that we're able to write and we don't have any agendas other than wanting, to get truthful information out there.
Yeah, it's funny. My mom told me today that she was at her doctor, and her doctor's daughter is a journalist living down in South America, and she's been featured on New York Times and a few of these other sites. But basically what she was saying is that she doesn't like it because they basically say, look, you can only write about this, or you can write about that, or we want you to write about this. It's like they censor what's coming in and what's coming out. And it's with the way the laws are set up to when it comes to the media, because the media is most media companies are corporations, considering the laws in the U.S. consider corporations people. These corporations are able to lie or distort or censor or create an agenda without any kind of accountability or legal repercussions, So I think that's one big thing that people don't realize is that the mainstream media, not only are they allowed to lie to you, but they do. And they get away with it. And if they ever get caught, all they do is put out an apology. But all the times they don't get caught, it's just programming on the American people that could be who knows what.
Yeah, well, that's what's so great about the Internet now, the age of the Internet, is that, people can fact check these things. So that's why you see just this mass exodus from the mainstream media with their numbers dropping by the day, because people are able to go and see that they're not telling the truth and see that they have an agenda. You especially see this with foreign policy nowadays, I think, with the whole Syria ordeal, no one really bought into that because of all the reporting done mostly, by alternative media online exposing all that nonsense.
Yeah, I saw an article that basically said like Syria is probably the first war that the alternative media stopped, and it's true, because if you look at the mainstream, I don't know if you saw that report that came out a few months later, and of course it didn't come out for a few months afterwards, but it turns out that almost all the people that were being interviewed on TV about Syria, all these experts, quote unquote experts, turned out to be basically representatives of the defense industry, basically lobbyists and advisors for
actors.
The defense industry. Yeah.
They're actors in front of a green screen, and they work for the companies that they're supposedly doing an in-depth research on. And the research, information is coming from lobbyists. So what are you doing? You're not digging at all.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's like once the people finally get a hold of it, and once they finally grasp that, I think we're going to see it. We're going to see the shift come a lot quicker. And like you were saying earlier, Mikhail, about how their numbers are dropping and their ratings are dropping. I mean – all of our website numbers are growing. You know, all the websites are growing, and all this mainstream media stuff is dying off because they're not covering stuff. They're not covering Fukushima. And that's one thing I wanted to get into, because I know you've been doing a lot of in-depth articles on Fukushima. Maybe if you could talk a little bit about how you go about finding your info for these stories, and also why you think the mainstream has been ignoring it.
Yeah, that's something that's been a really popular issue, and it's really hard because there is a lot of different information out there. With you know, some people farther believe it's much worse, you know, and some people that don't believe it's as bad. I mean, I pretty much find it the same way I find all the other news. I find is, you know, just staying totally glued to the news stream about 15 hours a day. So, yeah. But otherwise, yeah, that's a big issue. And I always find it funny that the media always, you know, will push certain environmental issues when they, you know, are going to get paid from it. But, you know, when we have real environmental issues like this, you know, you don't hear a word from the mainstream media. And so, the thing is, all we have seen is lies come out, and we're now coming out and hearing that, you know, the levels in Japan are so much higher than they originally said, and it's like every week you hear that what you were originally told 6 months ago is much worse. So I really have no trust as far as the mainstream media telling us what's really happening over there.
I read recently an article that said, you know, even where me and Nick live in San Diego, it's in our kelp. And it's pervasive along the food chain everywhere, because the oceans are all interconnected. So it's just going to come down to, you know, recognizing where the hot spots are. If we need to evacuate the West Coast, it's going to happen no matter what. So getting the information out there sooner rather than later, I really commend you for being part of that, because if it saves lives, it's going to be worth whatever we go through as far as persecution as alternative journalists, because at the end of the day, it's about spreading information that's important.
Yeah, and you have to be really, you know, careful, of course, to make sure you do a lot of fact-checking. There was some huge radiation in California that I, you know, said, hey, is this Fukushima? And I also noted that it could be naturally occurring radiation, which it later turned out to be. And so I'm glad I said that it could be that. And a lot of people didn't say that it could be that. They didn't go with that because, you know, I guess it wasn't, you know, as exciting. And so those are the kind of things you have to do is fact check. But exactly, for me with Fukushima, it's such a big issue that, you know, I'd rather err on the side of caution and say, hey, this could be Fukushima, instead of just saying, well, you know, the scientists claim it's not, or the government claims it's not. Especially with, you know, all these dying sea stars that are melting along the entire West Coast and all the issues we have on the West Coast, I don't really want to, you know, sit around 5 years and, you know, wait for someone else to tell me that it's bad. You know, I'd rather, you know that it's bad now.
Yeah, we need to know it's bad now, because it's still possible to clean up, and we have to force them. You know, like me and Nick have gone over before, there's options, natural options. There's hemp, and then there's the goo they found in Chernobyl that eats radiation. So we can clean it up. We just got to force them to do it.
Well, what's so sad about it is that even the cleanup is like a whole corporate ordeal, you know? I mean, they're not going to let some – they would never go be like, oh, this, you know, alternative solution is so much better. They're just going to go with, you know, whichever company lined their pockets the most. And you see that with oil spills. I saw a report from John Stossel and how some private company came out and said, hey, we want everyone to have a contest. We'll give you, I think it was $1 million if you come up with the best way to clean up oil. And – like the first place person's device, whatever they used, was literally like 30 to 50% times more effective than what the government's been using for 20 years. But the government just goes with, you know, whatever industry lines their pocket. So that's another issue we have with Fukushima, probably.
Yeah, you're always going to have this, I mean, anything involved with government is going to have this bureaucratic element, you know, and it's either corrupted or just wasteful, you know, and it's like when it's brand new, it's wasteful. Once a bureaucracy matures, then the corruption sets in, you know, and it's kind of that repeating issue that we keep seeing ever since, I mean, the days of Babylon. It just keeps coming back around over and over again. I wanted to ask you what you thought about what do you think about Glenn Greenwald's new venture, and about the story that he broke today about the about how the NSA uses metadata to do drone strikes in the Middle East.
I'm not really surprised. You know, the NSA, I mean, that seems like something that they would more likely do, that you would expect if you had to guess. You know, you'd be like, oh, they'd be more involved in that kind of thing than spying on Americans. But I'm actually really excited to see Glenn's website. You know, there's been some questionable things regarding, you know, his involvement with people from PayPal for their history of, you know, going against WikiLeaks and whatnot. But other than that, I think Glenn Greenwald has his intentions in the right place, and I think he definitely cares about what he's writing about. So I'm excited to see a news outlet that isn't going to hold back. And is I think since they're such big names also, that I think the mainstream media is going to try to be like them. And I think that's better for everyone.
Yeah, yeah, I think you're right. We're going to see a shift because we're you know, like we were talking about, the mainstream media is seeing its numbers dwindle, and then they're going to say, oh wow, well Greenwald's site's doing awesome, and sites like, you know, Vice are doing great, and all these, you know, all these kind of, you know, a little bit more independent type of sites, and then they're going to try to emulate what's going on. But at the same time, of course, they're going to try to just co-opt, like they always do, try to co-opt the momentum or whatever, and try to, you know, turn it back into some kind of distraction, more or less. But that's just become expected nowadays. It's just gone to that point now. One thing that we always kind of cover at the Anti-Media, and I kind of wanted to get your take on it, is the way that every time the media creates this huge distraction, like this Justin Bieber arrest, coke deal thing, whatever that was, and this whole Duck Dynasty ordeal, it seems like, you know, it's when they create these huge media distractions is when the government does, like, its dirtiest deeds. So when they did the Duck Dynasty passage, the Duck Dynasty hype, that's when they passed the 2014 NDAA, which contains the indefinite detention provision, which basically removes all of our right to trial and our right to a defense and our innocent until proven guilty. Like, all due process is done away with under the NDAA. And they always sneak it in under these you know, just total manipulation schemes. But what do you think about those? And I mean, what do you think's going on?
Well, I'm not surprised, but I think it goes both ways also, where there's times where they have distraction set up, but then I think there's also times where things happen and then they take advantage of that and say, okay, what can we do while the attention's turned? So that's something, yeah, that we're always going to have to deal with, and that's a question everyone should always ask no matter what, is, you know, what's in the other hand? Because that's what the government likes to do, as you said, is they like to have distractions, and so it's much easier to get things away. I mean, we all remember the passage originally of the NDAA, which was signed, you know, in the middle of the night on New Year's when everyone was out drinking and partying. So, yeah, that's what they do. Criminals do stuff, you know, at night, and they do it in the dark, and they do it in secrecy.
Yeah, they're smart about it, you know. And let's look back to maybe the most fateful day of the whole United – of all U.S. history. Back in 1913 when they signed into law the Federal Reserve Act, everybody was at Christmas break. You know, they did it during Christmas. So, I mean – there's an obvious pattern going on here. They take advantage of times when people are distracted, be it the Super Bowl, be it New Year's, Christmas, some kind of media distortion, media manipulation. Whether they plan on it or whether they just take advantage of the fact, I mean, it's a pretty obvious trend, you know, and I think that's one thing that I guess the people that are listening to this show, which more or less are probably people that know it's going on with the media and know what's going on in the world, that's one thing that we have to be really careful of. So when we see these, you know, these big spikes in coverage of whatever, whenever they're doing this blanket coverage of something, we know that there's something else going on, and we got to catch it ahead of time and be able to look for what's really happening.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the mainstream media definitely goes along with that for sure. It seems they just sit around a lot of the time waiting for these stories to come out. So, I mean, as long as we can figure out what is going on as opposed to what they want us to think is going on, that's always a plus side.
And you have to remember, in traditional media outlets, you're going to have generally the writers and researchers assign stories by editors. It's kind of like the way the Supreme Court shoots down every time we want something done. Well, an editor at a newspaper somewhere else, well, they have their corporate agenda they get every day from their bosses.
Exactly. That reminds me of those that recent, you know, study that came out that said, you know, taking any vitamins is horrible for you. And if you notice, those come out every year around November, December, because New Year's is when everyone wants to get healthy. So it's becoming so obvious if you, you know, like all of us, if you just are looking at the news all the time, you start to see these patterns that are really laughable if you think about it.
Yeah, man, it's almost it really is kind of a pattern, you know, and I think we're getting better and better at catching it. One of our most successful posts ever was about the NDAA and this whole Duck Dynasty thing. Now, we knew about the NDAA. There was some info that came out about it. We knew they were getting ready to debate it. In fact, like two or three days before the NDAA was actually signed again, I was actually talking to some of my friends. I'm like, dude, we got to find out when they're going to debate this NDAA so that we can put some pressure on the Congress. And sure enough, 2 days later, this whole Duck Dynasty thing goes off, and boom, they signed the NDAA. Now, we released a post about it, about how basically the Duck Dynasty thing was used as a huge distraction. And, I mean, it was one of our biggest posts that we've ever made. And the guys from Panda, People Against the NDAA, picked it up, and they got, like, something like 20,000 shares off of this meme. I mean, it was ridiculous. And it got, like, 8,000 shares from our page and 5,000 shares from another page. I mean, it was just, like, it was a great post. But I think people are finally getting sick of it. And when they realize how they've been duped, they're like, oh, my God, I can't believe I fell for that.
Well, it's these issues that they push, too, are usually such ridiculous issues, like the Duck Dynasty or the Justin Bieber. It's like, in reality, even people who aren't news junkies don't care. They're like, you know, they don't want to hear about it. So even then, it kind of fails to – I think those memes help a lot, because, you know, people are so tired of hearing that stuff that they see that, and they're like, okay, this is what matters to me, not Duck Dynasty guys or, you know, Justin Bieber riding around being a little kid.
Flying in a Lamborghini at 50 miles an hour.
I couldn't believe that. I don't know the details.
I just couldn't believe that. He got caught drag racing and he was only going 50. I just couldn't believe that.
Well, the best story was that his pilots had to wear gas masks because the cabin in his G5 was full of cannabis.
Oh, man.
That was the best story. So, yeah, it's starting to get so predictable. It's fun to watch. It's fun to bring out memes like, hey, while you were all watching some guy make inflammatory comments about homosexuals on some show that you don't even watch, we passed something that affects everyone, and we're going to indefinitely detain you. Good night.
Yeah, and I just got to give props to the anti-media. I tell Nick this all the time, but they produce the best memes I've ever seen on the internet, so it's pretty fun to follow that site.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Hey, we got Ponder on the line. He's the dude that hooks us up with our intro music and our outro music, and he just released a new album. What's up, man? How you doing?
Pretty good, man. Just chilling.
So you're a local musician here in San Diego. You guys do some hip hop stuff. If you want, you can go ahead and drop you know, whatever it is you're working on right now. I know you just released an album.
Yeah, I recently just dropped on the 8th, the mixtape. It's a boxing theme, 80s boxing theme mixtape that pays tribute to, like, the golden era of boxing, like, in the 80s. And pretty much, man, it's just to try to, you know, keep people to keep fighting for their dreams and just to keep pushing regardless of, you know, the circumstances that they're in, and just to kind of hopefully, you know, with this mixtape, I want to inspire people just to keep going at it, man, whatever it is they're trying to do, to keep pushing. You got to keep fighting for it and stuff.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, me and DB listen to the intro song every time, like before the show starts, and it, like, gets us hyped up every time.
Oh yeah,
thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Yep, I see a lot of parallels between you and Immortal, man. I just hope you keep it up, and just if you can get to his level with spreading awareness, you're gonna make the world a way better place.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Yeah, just trying to, you know, really get out there and just trying to push the music out there, man. It's really just about, like I said, not giving up, and you just got to keep, being consistent with it, you know, persistent and just keep getting it out there. You can't really just take any days off when it comes to, you know, like doing what you want to do. You got to just push at it and keep going.
So we want to talk a bit about we have Mikhail on the line, which is a journalist, a friend of ours, a really respectable journalist in the independent community. And we're talking about this whole media manipulation. And we know that it kind of like spills over into the music scene as well, into the pop culture. And you know, we wanted to find out some ways how you go about breaking through this mainstream, you know, music, this like stuff that you hear on the radio or stuff that you hear on MTV or whatever. I don't even think they play music on MTV anymore, do they? But how do you go about, like, you know, getting through that stuff, just like we have to do with our media? How do you do it on the music side of things?
Well, now that, you know, we have like the social networks, you got Twitter, you got Facebook and SoundCloud, man, it's really just about pushing it through there, you know, and with that, you can already get to the people. So you don't really need, I mean, I think nowadays, like, you don't need a label to make it, you know, and personally, like, I wouldn't want to be on a label to make it because that's all corporate. You know, once you get on a label, it's like you're a puppet for the agenda that they want you to get across to the people. And I feel as like, as a musician, you have all the means, like, everything's there in the social network. You have, you know, SoundCloud, you got Bandcamp. Like, I just put this mixtape out via Bandcamp for free and people could download it. So for me, it's just really getting to the people and doing something different, man, and just using the social network to get it out there, you know. And I think that's all you really need as a musician is, you know, you have the connection with the people. Now it's just about getting your material out there and getting it to them.
Yeah, and now you got this stuff like Kickstarter and Indiegogo where, like, before, you know, it'd be like impossible to go on tour without having some kind of, you know, some kind of big contract or something. But now you can, like, crowdfund, you know, people can crowdfund, you know, albums, they could crowdfund their tours. And you know, I think these kind of open source ideas are going to unlock the whole independent media field, not just music, but also in journalism in general.
Definitely, man. It's like a new movement, man. It's just going on, like, with everything, with music, with you guys are doing the media. I think people are just waking up and realizing, like, we don't need anyone to do what we want to do, you know? We have everything we need. We have the people, the friends, the connections, and it's just really about doing it and just getting it out there, I think, man. I mean, we have everything we need here, you know? You got the social networks. You got all that stuff.
Yeah, man, it's just people. Like, you know, if the trend continues, and if we can go in an economic sense, in a media sense, in an organizational sense, where we can, and in an economic sense too, if we can keep driving this bottom up idea, which is the only way to go, and government as well, because we don't want to be governed by these. We don't want to be having some dude in Washington D.C. telling us what we can and can't put in our own bodies, or even what we can and cannot wear. I mean, I don't know if you've even seen this, but there's some stories about these cities that are banning sagging. They say you can't sag your pants in our city, you'll get a ticket for that. You know, I mean, these bureaucrats are like overstepping their bounds beyond anything we've ever seen. But like anything else, we gotta resort back to this decentralized idea. You know, whether it's social networking to spread our media, or whether it's the way that we govern ourselves, the way we form businesses and things like that. I mean, if we want to stick to that corporate structure, I mean, go ahead. But I think that the way that the society is moving is away from that, you know. And I think that's it's really good for all of us, you know, all of us being in this independent scene. The fact that these ideas are spreading, I think, is going to help us all.
Yeah, I think, yeah, man, we're starting to realize that, you know, the corporate interest is not our interest, you know, they're just out for money and, you know, and it's not really like, it's not what we're about, you know, we're just about, you know, I mean, we're trying to make a living, we're trying to do what we love and, you know, like back to the record label stuff, like you go on the label and you realize, like, you know, they're trying to push an agenda and they're trying to make you be a certain way and it just doesn't go.
All right, man. Well, coming to the end of the show. You're having a launch party at the office in San Diego on Wednesday night. So you guys make it up for that. Thank you guys for calling in. We'll catch you guys on Wednesday.
Thanks a lot for having me, man.
I'ma let them know, no, through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.